Hey friends, welcome back to the podcast and Right Side Up Collective. We're airing this video over there. This is a really unique podcast episode, and frankly, I loved it. So it's pretty long, we understand that, but this is part interview from Brian Sims on his book, Leading Together. He talks about adaptive leadership, adaptive change that we're all wrestling through. And there's some really helpful principles, but it's also part consulting session. We are going through some changes at Stayforth, and I'm vulnerable in here about some of my challenges as a founder, some of my weaknesses, and frankly, just the challenge that it is for an organization to grow from something that was a small dream and idea to something that's a little bit bigger of a 2.0, and now really the 3.0 moment that we're at Stayforth, as we want to resource more leaders, but we also want to keep our values intact. We want to be an empowering organization. We want to grow larger, but we also want to be adaptive and small enough to be able to handle the challenges you're actually facing, not the ones that we think you're facing. So with that said, I hope, first of all, you take this episode in. Secondly, I'd hope that you would maybe share this and invite somebody else into this episode. Third, I hope that you'll actually take a look at some of the adaptive challenges that we are facing and maybe that you are facing right now, and you would understand what a timely moment this is right now. As we are in extended COVID and sort of exiting a COVID era, we've hit 2 years of a lot of these challenges. People are just ready to move forward, but we don't fully know where we're going. Another way of saying that, we have some clarity of next steps. We don't have certainty of where we are heading. I believe certainty in general is a farce. I believe that we are looking for some level of control. Hear me say this, I don't know where the world will be 2 years from now. I don't know exactly where Stayforth will be a year from now as we continue to grow and adapt and morph and serve more leaders, but we are humbly committed to finding that out and to heading down that path. And so this podcast experience, this video experience, again, is part interview of Brian Sims on his phenomenal book about team, the challenges of team, why we lead alone, and why we wouldn't lead together, and part consulting session talking to me about the challenges in Stayforth. It was wildly helpful to me. I think it will be wildly helpful to you. Friends, we're going to continue to kind of morph these things. We want to remind you, if you're up for more of these conversations in a psychologically safe space, not Facebook, we want to invite you over to Right Side Up Collective. That's rightsideupcollective.com. Hungry practitioners looking for real steps toward change and leadership in this moment where we desperately need it. So enjoy my conversation with Brian Sims. He is a professor. He is a consultant. He's a coach. He's also a thought leader and an author in this space. He has a broad range of experience with change and with leadership he brings right here to our Stayforth community. Enjoy my conversation with my new friend, Brian Sims. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here, Alan. Great to be with you.
Been fun getting to know you a little bit. And I mean, we have so much in common. So much of our heart at Stayforth is around healthy leadership, and part of that is around team. So, man, today we're going to dive in all around your book and the topic of study really for today around team. And I would just say, Brian, I think increasingly by the month, if not by the week, we're seeing a failure of team, a failure of culture, and the increased need for this message of team and how team actually works together. So it feels really timely in this moment, and I'm sure timeless principles in there as well. Before we dive into that topic, tell us a little bit more about you and some of the things that you do, but also how did you get obsessed enough with team that you would write a whole book on it?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alan. Well, so my own background, you know, I grew up in the church, grew up in a congregation that actually had a bivocational pastor. And so, I mean, I didn't actually hear the language of clergy and laity until I got to seminary myself. And so we did everything in team. I didn't really know any different. And my parents were lay people that were heavily involved in all of that. And by the time I was in middle school, I was on teams and serving in ministry and stuff. And so in a very real way, it's the paradigm I grew up with and didn't realize it's so radically different than what so many people experience in the church, as well as elsewhere. And so that was early experience for me. But I'm also a sports addict and a musician. And team is like everything when it comes to that stuff. I love team sports. I love ensembles and jazz bands and even drama that I used to be a part of a lot. Everything happens best in team, and that synergy that comes from all of that. So that was, you know, some of my early experiences. And have had over the last 22 years the opportunity, started coaching with this organization called SLI. Was in the very early stages of the development of that. We're now 22 years in, and having interacted in churches and denominational groups, networks for the last couple of decades, and recognizing that isolation and solo leadership and a staff-driven or pastor-driven kind of model in a lot of churches, church planter-driven models in church plants, that everything is kind of about the solo leader, has prompted a deep dive for me into what is really the biblical model around this, as well as just practically, how can this work in the world we live in now? And then my PhD work is actually in organizational leadership. And I spent my time studying complexity theory, adaptive leadership, things that I get really excited about. Some people will be like, what in the world?
Who cares? We'll nerd out about it later and save everybody else.
And so, but that sort of stuff. And what's interesting for me is the more adaptive and the more challenging the world is that we're in, the organizations we're in, everything else, the less likely it is that a single leader is going to have the solutions, the answers for that sort of thing. Wow. And so you mentioned as we got started, it feels like a really timely word right now. And it is timeless. This goes all the way back to the Trinity for me, working in team, but it's timely right now because we're facing so many challenges that we don't have answers to. Adaptive challenges in that kind of way. And as I love to say, getting through adaptive challenges requires shared leadership. We cannot do it by ourselves. None of us have the intellect, the capacity, the gifts, the strengths, all of that. None of us can do that by ourselves. And yet so many leaders are trying to in every different sector across our world. So,
all right, we got to start there. Why are so many leaders trying it? And we see that it is not working. Why are so many continuing to do it, Brian?
Well, you know, some of it, I always think of the metaphor, and my friend Alan Hirsch uses this metaphor a lot, but anthropologists have used this idea a lot. Like, culture is like the water that the fish swim in. They don't even know they're in it. And I think one of the big reasons why we get stuck in this and continue to perpetuate it is because it's all we know. It's all we've seen. And so some of the stuckness is not out of conviction. In fact, I run into leaders all the time that actually resonate with the idea of shared leadership, but they've never seen it happen.
Yeah.
In a healthy way, which means that the only thing they know is to do it how they learned it. And it's typically in a solo kind of way. So that's, I think, one side of why we stay stuck in that solo heroic leader paradigm. But I think the flip side of it is that we like control and we like recognition and we lack humility sometimes. And, I had somebody ask me a number of years ago, having done a lot of coaching in a lot of congregations, and different movements and networks and whatnot. If you were to name the kind of underlying value running through the decision-making process of most local churches, what would it be? And of course, this is not like the value they would preach about, but like what's actually shaping our decision-making. And I mean, it was an easy answer for me. It's the word control. Mm. I think when we're afraid, we try to control our environment. And this, I mean, it's true individually, it's true in our families, it's true in our churches, it's true in every sector. And yet when I think about what it means for Jesus to be Lord and for us to be true disciples of Jesus, me being in control does not fit into that equation. But this notion of control is, I mean, it is inherent within our vision and muscle memory of what it means to be a leader. It's to be in control, to be in charge. And we have gotten this framework that for me says, you know, anytime things get messy and we end up with disequilibrium, what a leader is supposed to do is bring control, is actually bring equilibrium, is to make sure everything's okay. When in reality, the disequilibrium, it creates the possibility of us moving forward. And yet we're going to have to share that with others. None of us are going to have the ability as an individual leader to, you know, to get through the hardest stuff by ourselves. And so the last thing I would say about this is that I think there's a cultural expectation in a lot of organizations, a lot of congregations, a lot of networks that when we face hard stuff, the boss is supposed to tell us what to do. And so under the weight of that responsibility and that expectation, many of us keep doing that, even though we don't know what we're doing.
Sure.
Even though we may not have answers to the complex issues that are out there. And many of us, not me included, you know, are well trained to be experts in something. And anytime you become an expert, you're more likely to want to share your expertise and lean on that instead of have the humility to say, you know what, I don't know. We're going to have to figure that out together.
And that phrase right now is so powerful. I don't know. But like you said, but let's figure that out together versus I don't know. Let's live in a zone where we lack clarity. And we talk about what we're after is clarity, not certainty. I think the illusion is certainty. I don't know where we'll be in 2 years. I don't know what's happening in Europe right now, where that's going to go. I don't know what gas prices are going to be. I don't know whether teams are going to come back to work or what hybrid work looks like. I don't know. However, let's figure this out together. That's almost the best of both worlds, that confident humility that Adam Grant talks about. Of confidence, we're called here. I have confidence. This is the zone or space we need to be in, but I actually don't know what's ahead. So here's what I'm hearing from you, which I really love. First of all, it's the only thing we've seen. It is so easy to fall back to it if we actually haven't seen anything else. Secondly, control. The third, what I'm almost hearing you say is it's easier to have someone think for us than to actually do the thing, especially when we're in fear mode. Am I catching that right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that for me is, you know, think about this from the perspective of, you know, I'm in an organization and this is complex and it's easier for me to just defer to the boss, or I'm a layperson in a congregation and it's easy for me to go, well, I've never been to seminary. I don't really know the Bible as well. And I don't really know so it's probably better for the pastor to just figure this out.
Yeah. Easier. Yes. More effective. No.
No. Well, and once again, and so it allows us to kind of shirk our responsibility and give that away. But is that really what God is calling us to? And what would it look like for us to do it together? But then once again, the flip side is if the pastor's going, I don't know what to do, but I'm afraid to admit it. And the layperson in this case is saying, I don't really want any responsibility. That compounding effect there is perpetuating the problem.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And we have that a lot.
Yes, yes, yes. We are so unprepared for the actual answers today. And again, a lot, you know, what Bolsinger writes on this and Heifetz on adaptive leadership is that once we understand that the role of the leader, maybe this is reason number four here, the role of the leader is not what we think it was and what has been inherited. I think we need to actually rethink and reimagine what leadership is and isn't, which I would imagine that's so much of your role there at the seminary, right? Is helping leaders sort of reimagine their role.
It is. And that's what I've been doing in work teaching at the seminary in the last 12 years. And it's what we've been doing through the coaching work of SLI over the last 22 years, trying to help positional leaders to reimagine their roles. And for us to think about leadership more in terms of environment and process than in terms of the leader's role. And so much of what's out there, even in Christian leadership literature that's out there, is about the character, which really good. That's important. But the character and role that leaders play. And what you're describing from an adaptive leadership model is us kind of saying, what if the role of the leader is actually radically different than what we thought it was? And it doesn't mean that the leader isn't responsible. It doesn't mean they're, you know, but it does mean that they're looking at this, they're looking at their role more in the context of how can I create the space that we can figure this out together,
yeah,
that is empowering, yeah, to others so that something generative can come from this, as opposed to how do I come up with the solutions to the challenges we're facing? How do I be the expert in the room?
Yep, that's good. And the pressure that takes off. So it's interesting how people are feeling underutilized yet frustrated in many organizations, like, and so kind of, especially mid-tier leaders. And I coach a lot of them, of feeling underutilized yet heading toward burnout at the same time. So that's really interesting to me. And yet the need for empowerment. And I like that the environment where you can actually impact something, people are quitting their jobs and their bosses to head to other places where they can actually have an impact. And exactly. I think it's the need of the day. I'm grateful for the millennial spirit of also saying, I want to go somewhere where I can make an impact. At the same time, the leader that's heading the thing up is exhausted, decision fatigue, and is actually needing the inverse of what the other person needs in terms of responsibility load or share. Man, what an interesting collision is happening right now.
Absolutely. It is very interesting. And I was in a coaching call just earlier this morning with a very seasoned leader, very experienced, and they're doing team really, really well. And one of the glory sightings that he shared, one of these places where he's really seeing the Lord work, is in these two leaders he's coaching that are on his team that have their own teams that are doing all of this crazy experimentation. And there's no way for him to control it. And he doesn't desire to, but some of that's like, we have no idea what this is going to lead to. And they may fail at half of what they're trying, but there's an environment of freedom, of experimentation, but it's built around a shared set of values and shared commitments together, shared responsibility together. It's not just a, hey, I'm giving you permission to go do what you want. They're actually very much in it together in a covenantal way with clarity, to use the language you did a little. They don't know what it's all leading to, but they do have clarity as to who they are, as to what God is calling them to, as to what they're up to. And because of that clarity and that shared sense of responsibility, it's like, hey, you're empowered. Go find a new way to do this. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that. And that's what we need. But once again, those are the middle manager kind of people in his particular church and organization, larger congregation. And they're having a ball. They're empowered, but it's his favorite thing to tell stories about as a senior leader. Mm-hmm. But his role is radically different than the way we often see that role played, where everything stops at the desk of the boss.
That's good. Note the end of this time, I am going to try to solicit some free consulting about what we're going through in our team. So let's do a little bit of live coaching consulting here in a little bit. Cause we literally headed out of a meeting before this, where the team is weighing in on various things, and we're trying to solve some issues and pain points, and we're flexible, we're adaptive. So we actually can solve those pretty quickly, but love to kind of discuss that. A couple other areas, you know, why are people not living this out? Speed. Talk about speed, because naturally people would say, dang, that is so much slower to involve the whole team in that. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I would say, yep. That's right. It is slower to start with. And so, I mean, the phrase I like to use around this is that, a good leader can always get more done than a bad team. And that actually, and bad team, I don't mean bad people, but I'm just like, if it's not effective. And so many leaders, and we hear this from leaders all the time. It's just faster if I do it myself. It is faster today if you do it yourself. Yes. But it won't be a week from now and a year from now and 10 years from now. And the problem is that if, as a leader, I continue to function that way, I'm going to always have to function that way.
Right.
And so it is. And so you go all the way back to Tuchman and his work on teams and this whole idea of forming, storming, norming, and then performing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is language that they use, you know, and you go study teams and organizations. This is the language of it. And why? Because if you're actually going to get to that performing stage where clearly, I mean, duh, a team can outperform a good leader if the team is effective, if they have alignment, unity, you know, and they're in it together. That obviously a team can outperform a good leader, even a great leader, but you've got to get to that stage. And in order to do so, what does it take? Well, you've got to have trust. You've got to have, you know, shared relationship. You've got to have some sense of shared purpose together. And so I love to talk about kind of the both and sides of this. Of, you know, you've got shared relationship and you've got shared purpose. You've got it's unity of love and unity of purpose. These things working in collaboration. It's harmony and synergy that we got something, mm-hmm. we got a mission we're called to, but the only way we get that done is if we're in a deep relationship with one another. And so clearly building that kind of deep relationship and getting that kind of clarity and unity around shared purpose, shared values, that it doesn't happen overnight. And it's why a lot of leaders feel like, you know, it's faster for me to just keep doing it by myself. The problem, of course, is that that might be true if you're facing only technical things that we already know how to do. But if you're facing adaptive challenges, that breaks down by itself. Like you can't figure that out by yourself. And but the long-term view of this is if you're looking at this in terms of generations, like we want to have a generative effect. We want to see multiplication happen. Then I cannot make those decisions by myself. We have to figure out how to collaborate around this. And I've got to empower people if I'm in a position of leadership or we're doing this together, because at some point I'm going to be gone. And if everything's built around me, there's no way this organization survives. And how does that serve the kingdom of God?
Yeah, it's good.
But if it's built around shared and every person, you know, has got a part in this and a sense of ownership with shared responsibility, then multiplication becomes possible and we can see truly generative transformation happen.
That's good. And, you know, the old adage, want to go fast, go alone, want to go far, go together. I don't think we can stress that too much. What's the aim here? And I think if our head is down and we're looking days or weeks ahead, then you're right. It is faster to be able to do that. I also think more and more challenges are moving from technical challenges we've seen before to adaptive challenges. Let's figure this out. Workplace, for example. What is a workplace anymore? Is it Zoom? Is it Slack? We have a small office here that's sort of been a private team office. We're moving to a larger social space, co-working event space at Stayforth / office, and we're going to share that with some other people. That's an adaptive challenge. Are we going to be able to figure that out? Yes. Exactly what it will look like, I'm not sure, but we'll dive in. And yet I see a lot of organizations stuck and a lot of organizations looking in the rearview mirror. And I think it's a wake-up call. We are not going back to the rearview mirror. We are not returning to where we were. Not all people will return to church. And I'm not like the bearer of bad news there. I think we all know this stuff down deep, is that we will work differently than we have before. Some companies literally will not require people to come back to the office. So that brings change, chaos, uncertainty, and opportunity at the end of that. And so it both is nerve-wracking and exciting at the same time. Let's keep discussing a little bit more. I just want to keep throwing this stuff off of you. Again, it's the only thing we've seen. We want control. There's an old leadership paradigm maybe thrust upon us. Faster, maybe easier. I don't have to think for myself. The last one is we've seen some dysfunctional team environments, and some people have everything from PTSD about that, lead by committee, or it's almost faux team leadership. So talk about that and how some of the leaders listening are going, I've tried to do team again before and I ain't going to do it again. Where do you see sort of that faux team leadership and the failures of the past, unfortunately blocking our team imagination?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one example I always think of is a church plant that I had an opportunity to do a little bit of coaching in that the planter was, you know, a classic kind of apostolic evangelist kind of person and very entrepreneurial. And he told the story of team of what he wanted, but he recruited people around him that were yes men and yes women. Mm. And most of whom that were not terribly confident in who they were. And so what it turned into was he had a crew of people to delegate all kinds of tasks to, but they weren't actually sharing leadership. Now, they all did have responsibility, but it wasn't shared responsibility. I think of another pastor friend of mine that I worked with that he was constantly, it was funny because he had formerly been in youth ministry, and he treated the church plant almost like, you know, we've got just like having volunteers for a youth ministry.
There you go.
And so it looks like team on paper, but it's faux team because everybody's got their particular job to do, but it may not have any tie to their calling and passion. They're not sharing responsibility. They're, you know, it's like, okay, you go do the snack supper and you go do this and you go do this and you set up the sound system and you, and so I mean, everybody's got a job. It kind of looks like team, but it's not shared responsibility. It's not shared purpose in that kind of way. And what I've watched in many of those is that your stronger leaders end up leaving.
Yeah.
Because that faux team environment, you know, say again.
It's because they feel under challenged.
They're under challenged, underutilized. But it's also there's no integrity in it. You actually promise one thing and what we're doing is something different. You're describing a vision of what you want this to look like in terms of team, but you're actually in charge and we don't really have much say in this. And so I think that's some of what causes the PTSD. The flip side of it is, I mean, there are many other kinds of environments that are really unhealthy. And we experience these in teams and committees, mission groups, as well as small groups in local churches or whatever, or work teams where, you know, all we do is relational and we don't do anything missional. Or vice versa. All we do is discuss all the stuff and get something done, but we don't have any friendship. We don't have any relationships. And so it's really fascinating even looking at the literature and like organizational leadership literature around team and seeing that, I thought we were doing something innovative in our language and come to find out, actually you go read all the literature and it's like where you have task and relationship come together, mm-hmm. That's team. It's both and. And what we have in many churches is people are just doing kind of the committee kind of stuff and they're making decisions and trying to get something done, but they don't have any relationship. There's no formation. There's no friendship. Or they're in these groups that it's all about relationship and maybe formation and growth and all that, but we're not in mission in any kind of way. And it's not to say that either of those are bad, but the both and looks more like the Jesus model. Mm-hmm. And some of the PTSD, but even if it's not that dramatic, just frustration with things that look like team leadership is that it was just a waste of time. We never did anything except enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. Or it was, we're constantly trying to get stuff done, but we didn't care about each other. We didn't have trust. We didn't have, and so it wasn't very effective. And then they've got this sour taste in their mouth.
Yeah.
And once again, it leads to more of the, I'd rather just do it myself.
Sure. And do you think that each person or leader leans one direction, either toward a relationship or task?
I do. I think this is, I mean, it's personality. And it not only each leader, but I mean, I had a really seasoned leader ask me earlier today if churches have personalities like that. And I think they do. Yeah. And I wouldn't just say churches, organizations.
Totally.
That tend more toward conversation and relationship and all that, or tend toward more, we're going to get things done. And it really is, you know, team is the integration of those things. And the other piece that is common is that a lot of leaders that want to do team recruit teams around them, recruit people around them that are like them, that have the same kind of strengths. And you got to have shared passion for purpose if you're going to be on team together. But the more diverse a team is in terms of perspectives and roles, responsibilities, all of that, the better the team is. And if you have a whole crew of people that are wired the same, you end up over time with the groupthink kind of thing happening. And that's one of the other reasons why people get really frustrated with team is it's like, it's all just the pet project of that senior leader. And it's not well-rounded and nobody can speak anything in that context that is, that would go against whatever it is that, that they want. Yeah. And so, all of those kind of things can lead to, that PTSD or even just the sour taste in the mouth that causes us to continue to say, I'd rather just do this alone.
That's good. And I think it's a helpful thing. I invite leaders to think about which direction they lean, what's sort of your natural MO, what's great about that, what's, you know, a liability to that. And I think even seasonally, I think we can probably shift. And that's what I've seen, you know, based in stress, that something like the Enneagram lets us know, I am not acting as me right now. And so it's helpful for me to know if I'm overly mission driven and just about the task, then I'm missing something. And how do I sort of return to that? So I think if you're listening to this, if you're watching this, really helpful to do some self-assessment and to go, wow, I'm probably acting out of stress in this season. Where do I go when I'm trying to grab for control? I don't want to miss that. That control piece is huge, Brian, that you're talking about, because we've all been literally out of control. The world is out of our control. Yeah. As always, we just really have realized it over the last 2 years. So much we can learn here. So much each person could take notes here, share with your teams. I would encourage you listening and watching this, share this with your team. Have a conversation maybe with your ops person or your key volunteer or a staff member you're working with regularly, and how you're hearing this message may cause either excitement in you or frustration to say, yes, I'm actually dentally doing that. And I want to make sure that we get some free consulting out of this, Brian. So let me give you a little bit of context. Let's say you don't know us at all. And I say, oh, you wrote a book called Leading Together, The Holy Possibility of Harmony and Synergy in the Face of Change. And you do some coaching, consulting, some education around this. Man, you're a professor. Perfect. I'm so glad I landed with you on this international plane flight. But we only have 5 or so minutes. Give us 5 minutes of consulting on this. Stayforth Designs originally was just me and sort of a 1.0, moved to a 2.0, you know, a team of 4. Incredible. Love you, team. As you listen, we have now added 2 more and want to operationalize our values and multiply our impact. So we're moving from 4 to 6 and have just done that. Moving to a 3.0, which is a multiplicative where leaders are making decisions in a more decentralized way, and I'm empowering them to do that. But I'm still the founder. I'm still around. I still get in the way sometimes of that. People still see it as Alan's thing if they haven't met our team. And I think one key thing is that we have around 20 coaches who are living out our mission across the country. So kind of a strange setup here we've got, Brian. How would you give me thoughts or advice, maybe questions, things to think about on those two areas of both environment and process as we try to make this continuing shift into Stayforth 3.0.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, I mean, one of the things for me in terms of environment is even Google and others have done these studies that show that psychological safety is critical if people are going to be all in. And if teams are going to go well, organizations are going to go well. And so, especially as you add new people, there's a tendency sometimes for us to get a compliance rather than deep commitment from new people as they roll into a team. We've experienced this within SLI as well. And some of our context is really similar to what you described, from 2 of us in the beginning to eventually, you know, a team of 6. And then, you know, we got 40 coaches around the world that are doing stuff but very similar kinds of things. And that founder syndrome and that, oh, well, that's just kind of something those folks are working on. And how do you challenge that? Especially if you're a strong leader. And I know you are, Alan. How can others challenge that? How do you create the kind of space that actually makes it part of the conversation for them to, where there's enough psychological safety, there's enough trust that we can lean into the hard conversations and to make that part of the rhythm. And so, it could be as simple as What does it look like on a very regular basis in team to actually give people an opportunity to paint the picture of what they are seeing in the organization, as opposed to just, reflecting what you're seeing. And those new voices will obviously see something radically different than you do. And we do that a lot in our coaching work through the development of Covenant together. And having very clear commitment and expectations of just how our relationships are going to work with each other, where it's not just an informal kind of, with each other and we're on the same mission and we're working together well, but to actually name what our own personal non-negotiables are relationally with each other. So that, in some ways it's like wedding vows, in a marriage, where you're actually naming on the front end, this is what we're committing to. And no matter whether you do it or not, I'm promising you, this is what I'm in for. And that really helps when things get messy, because now we have this objective thing that we worked on before things got messy, this covenant that we can actually continually refer to. That's the first thing that pops for me, is creating that kind of psychological safety, that kind of relational safety with one another in order to challenge those kind of things. And I see this in you, Alan, but the humility and the vulnerability to consistently say, I need you to tell me the truth. That's one of my experiences, is a lot of founding leaders, they want that from people, but people don't really think they want that. Yes. And so how do you consistently not just communicate that, but create the space for people to actually provide that kind of feedback?
Yeah. I think that's really important, Brian. I feel some of that. There's also a power dynamic there. People are grateful.
Sure.
And I think we treat people well here on our team at Stayforth and give opportunities. And yet, I want to make sure. So again, team, if you are listening, you have permission. I'll tell you this again. And yet, I think the challenge is to create actual rhythms. Like, where in our weekly schedule do we actually have a place for that to happen? I think that can be my weakness. It's like, hey, whenever, go ahead and grab me. Well, I think busyness is part of this, right? The faster we're running, the more people aren't going to want to slow down. And I hear that phrase a lot. Oh, I'm sure you have a lot going on, but, and I think any founders listening, like, it's a real conundrum. It's real. And sometimes, Brian, I'd be curious what you see, kind of founder syndrome. Sometimes that's not fully addressed until 20, 30, 40 years in, when that person move on, and you thought you had leaders, but you only had people carrying out tasks. Has that been your experience with founder syndrome?
It has been. And it's true in a lot of places, with church plants, with nonprofits, with for-profits that I've seen. And it's why, it's what I would affirm, as you just said, and you asked environment and process, but in terms of the process side of that, so I mentioned environment, but what are the practices that actually enable that to happen? And what are we hoping for long-term? Continuing to paint the picture of, and to give them an opportunity, the people on your team, the people in your organization, to paint the picture of what does the future look like for us. And what people are used to is the founder painting that picture. And so giving them the opportunity to paint that picture, but then to back into that, now we're in a process of what practices will allow us to live into that, but what ways am I as a founder inhibiting that? And even if I don't want to be, I'm functioning as a solo heroic leader. Can you help me see that? But it actually may not be you. This is one of the other fascinations with founder syndrome kind of stuff. You can do everything right. You can ask the right questions, have the right rhythms, but people have to take the initiative. They have to sense that empowerment to actually step in. They have to have enough safety. And you creating that environment is critical to that, but their own past experiences and even personalities and everything else are going to play into whether or not they take that opportunity. And so I'll just tell you, I mean, like in SLI, our primary founder, 8 on the Enneagram, I'm a 2 on the Enneagram, which surprises a lot of people. But I didn't want to confront him about anything.
Right.
He was asking for it. He wanted mutual collaborative kind of stuff. And I did too, but I felt that he's older than I am. He's my boss. We have very different personalities. And even just the, he's an eight, he's a strong leader. My instincts were actually to defer. He didn't want me to. And so even with the intentionality of trying to create the space where I could just really, we could do this together and really speak into that, it took a long time in relationship. And a lot of the change was in me.
Sure.
And with having the confidence then to say, hey, we're in this together.
That's good.
One of the phrases that he uses all the time, and we use it throughout SLI, encourage leaders all the time. Anytime somebody refers to this as your thing, to correct and use we language. And as simple as that is, it's part of the process of saying you have ownership in this.
That's good.
This is yours too. And that's hard for founders to do.
Yeah, no, that's good. Really helpful. If you're listening to this and you're a founder, this has been a practice of mine for about the last year, is we and our and here at Stayforth versus this. And I actually don't have the authority to now make all the decisions that I once had the authority to make. And even if I did, it's also not what's helpful would be even that second layer of that. Just because you have the authority to doesn't mean that that's most helpful. And it's interesting, Brian, it's almost that you needed to hear, if you're a helper and that's how you're wired to help and contribute, that actually how you can help is by telling the truth. And sometimes the last 10% of clarity, how you hear that is you're not getting in the way. Actually, this is how you can help us get to the next level. And I think that's the importance of tools like the Enneagram that are, you know, great tools, but only a tool to be able to understand, oh, this is maybe how Brian even hears that. So even as you explain, I think it's a great example. We don't think we're intimidating. And just in general, I don't know too many leaders that are self-aware enough to know, I'm intimidating, but we kind of all are for different reasons. And, I don't intimidate myself when I wake up in the morning. Yeah, that's because you're you. And yet somebody's intimidated, Brian, maybe by your academic experience and by writing a book and all these things that you're not thinking that you're a big deal, but we're accidentally coming across that way. And that's been a blind spot of mine in the past.
And it's a blind spot for a lot of us. And I think, you know, you mentioned a few minutes ago, just the critical nature of the self-awareness that we need as leaders. And I completely agree with you. And the nuance that I would put into that is that even that our self-awareness requires help. That's the part for me that took a long time to learn. But that is the nature of accountability. And once again, it's part of what made it work with Craig and me for all these years with SLI, who, you know, is my boss. So I continue to serve with him. But everything we do is highly collaborative now. But being able to, him helping me see my blind spots and vice versa. It's the same that I experienced with my Linda, my wife. She sees things in me that I don't see. And both the possibilities, the greatness, as well as the liabilities, the blind spots, and the journey to self-awareness actually requires accountability. It requires friendship. It requires enough trust to lean into that. And so, you know, the number of times Craig would say, I want you to be honest with me. And at one point, I remember so vividly getting really honest about something. And I mean, I laid awake at night. I was so nervous about how this was going to come across.
Yep.
And he just laughed like, that was really hard for you, wasn't it? It's like, yeah, it was. He's like, okay, that's what I want.
Good.
And so he was affirming that, but he was also helping me see some of my own blind spot around that. And I've helped him with the same. That's what team does.
That's great.
Whether we're talking about a marriage or a work team or, you know, whatever. And so, especially in that founder syndrome, but it doesn't even have to just be founder. I mean, I watched this happen with, you know, a denominational leader with a pastor, or a pastor and a lay person, or a set of lay people.
Totally.
Those power dynamics get in the way. And they're even real. When we don't think they're part of the ethos, they are. And we have to address it. And if you've got the power dynamic, you got to go the extra mile to empty yourself and be for others what they need in order for us to really be in the collaborative environment we're talking about.
Brian, I'm so glad to know you. Congratulations on your book, Leading Together. And one of my favorite subtitles I think I've ever heard, The Holy Possibility of Harmony and Synergy in the Face of Change. I don't know if you could pack more in a subtitle than you did. So well done in
Thank
that.
You.
Glad to know you. Look forward to this conversation continuing. And this felt, you know, part interview, part consulting. So maybe you need to send me a bill after this. But
great. No way. This is great.
For that, man. Appreciate what you're doing. I think it's really unique that you're shaping people at the beginning of their journey in academia. You continue to shape people in the middle of that with SLI and some of your other coaching, consulting. And then I would imagine helping people finish well and also pushing into the next season. And there's not too many people that can cover that span in different ways. Brian, of course, people can pick up your book. Guys, we've got it in the show notes. Where can people learn more about you and maybe even get some consulting on adaptive change?
Yeah. So my website is briandsims.com. Brian's with a Y. Sims is with one M. So briandsims.com. And you can get a link to the book. We're also adding some more resources up there. Some of these kind of things, even podcasts and whatnot, but other resources. SLI is spiritual-leadership.org. And so all the coaching consulting stuff that I do, we've got a whole team of us that are doing that through SLI and partnering with other organizations in doing that as well. And so those are spaces that you can find me as well as find some of our work.
Awesome. Sounds great. We will chat again and love to bring you back into our Stay Forth community at some point.
Look forward to that. Great to be with you today, Alan.